From Tridio Media, I'm Father Roderick, and this is The Daily Breakfast. Every once in a while, I like to review a book that I read, and I'm trying to read more and more. I'm super happy with my Kindle. I have an American Kindle account, and sometimes people send me a gift card or something like that, so I have a little bit of a stash of a few dollars. And so I'm constantly hunting for bargains. And there is actually a special page on the Amazon Kindle store with the deals of the day, or they have the deals of the month. And so I'm every single morning, this is part of my morning computer routine, I go to that page and I check out, are there any books on sale? And usually when they are on sale, they are really massively on sale. So just yesterday, I bought the Kindle version of The Hobbit. I had a paper version of The Hobbit, but it belonged to my father. And it was bought in the 70s or perhaps even in the 60s, and it was completely falling apart. Not to mention that it is a Dutch version, and I'm now so used to the English names that I wanted to have my English copy of The Hobbit. And so 2 years ago, I went to New Zealand and someone gifted me the 75th anniversary print edition of The Hobbit. And it's a gem. It has the original cover art. I love it. But it's a very small version. It's a very tiny book. And unfortunately, getting older, this year I'll turn 50, I cannot really read for a long time when the print is so small. The advantage, of course, of a digital version of the book is I can make the letters be bigger. I'm so old. But you can just change the font and the font size, and that works really, really well. And so just yesterday, I saw that finally The Hobbit went on sale, and that only happens once or twice a year, for only $2.99. And I'd already bought the entire Lord of the Rings, also in digital form, in a similar discount, only paying $5 or something like that. So I have a nice collection of books that I always wanted to read, and on my Kindle every once in a while, that's what I do. The other tip that I have is if the book is on sale, usually the Audible audiobook is also on sale. And sometimes you get a very deep discount on those as well. Not always. For The Hobbit, for instance, the audiobook was still $12.99. So I was like, yeah, that's a little bit too much. And I don't really need it. That's a book that I'll just read. But sometimes having an audio version of the book really helps, especially if the book is very long. And sometimes I just don't have that much time to sit and read, but I walk, I'm on the treadmill, and so I have many occasions where I can listen when I'm cooking. I love to listen to audiobooks. So I've been reading this trilogy of books by Philip Pullman, his Dark Materials. It's a series that received a lot of acclaim, but also some criticism, especially criticism from religious groups, saying that, well, perhaps in scope, this is similar to the works of Tolkien or C.S. Lewis or even J.K. Rowling, but these books are so anti-religious and are so critical of most specifically of the Catholic Church. A number of years ago, the first book of the series, The Golden Compass, was turned into a Hollywood movie, and it was quite good. It wasn't really a big box office success, so we didn't see any sequels. And I remember watching that movie and wondering, well, where is the anti-Catholic stuff that people keep complaining about? I just didn't see it. And then I read The Golden Compass, and there were a few religious elements. I mean, this just takes place in a universe where there are actually different realities. And in some of these realities, the church is this kind of very autocratic, almost dictatorial organization that tries to rob people from their freedom and from their true self, et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm like, well, yeah, sure. I can see that there is a bit of a criticism towards an institutional church, but then again, it's still fiction. So I just couldn't really tell why people were so critical of this. So I started to read the second book, which is called The Subtle Knife. And that is when, towards the end of that book, I started to get a sense of, oh, wait a minute, I see where this is going, and I start to understand the criticism, because now we're getting to a point where it's more than just a fictional story. This is a book with a message, and the message is, let's get rid of religion that oppresses people. Let's get rid of a God that oppresses people and makes people a slave and robs them from their true freedom, etc., etc. So there, you see more fundamental criticism of religion and institutional religion. And I think that's probably going to be even more emphasized and going in overdrive in the third book. That's definitely what the story seems to indicate. And I can see that if you read the story in a sense that God is a tyrant and the church is just an institution that is oppressing people and needs to be overthrown, and the heroes of the story are those that do that, that rebel against God and the rebel against the church, basically choosing the side of not the angels but the demons in a certain way, then yeah, that's a pretty subversive message. But then I remembered that because the story itself is quite compelling, and you really – I mean there are a lot of things to like in these stories, and it's well written. I have to say I'm listening mostly to the audiobook, which is narrated by Philip Pullman himself, the writer. It's very well done. It's got a lot of voice actors as well, so it's super enjoyable. And of course, you kind of empathize how would you say that? I'm sympathetic to the quest of the main characters to overthrow the oppressors. But then what I don't agree with is that the oppressor is being identified as the Catholic Church, and that God, instead of being benevolent, is a tyrant, is something that people came up with only to punish us, and the only way to find ourselves is to rid ourselves of God. Yeah, that's where, of course, I'm like, I don't know. But can you find common ground in this? Because ultimately, this is something that comes from Thomas Aquinas, everyone is always trying to find the good. However, people can be mistaken as to what is good, what is truly good. And so even criminals have a certain motivation in that they think that if I rob this bank, it's going to be good for me, it's going to be good for my kids or whatever. And of course, they don't really think about the other negative consequences of them robbing a bank. And so – but Thomas says motivation is always based on a quest for something good, even though where people try to find that is debatable. And you need the guidance of your conscience. You need the guidance of the church to point you to what is truly the ultimate good to pursue, which in the end is only God is worthy of our pursuit. And so the question that I always ask me is, if I read this book and I try to put myself in the position of the writer, what is he really looking for? I mean, is it truly his aim to destroy the church, to rob the children? Because this is a children's book, at least the first two are, to rob children of their faith. Is that the only thing? Or is he trying to destroy what in his perspective is wrong about religion or about an institutional religion like the Catholic Church? Is he rebelling against an image of God that is like a tyrant instead of rebelling against who God truly is? And I remembered something that Archbishop Fulton Sheen once wrote in a foreword to a book. And he said, there are not 100 people in America who hate the Catholic Church. There are millions of people who hate what they wrongly believe to be the Catholic Church, which is, of course, quite a different thing. And that almost always applies to people that attack religion, that rebel against God or institutional religion or the church. Very often, there is hurt. There's something that hurt them in the past. People that have been scandalized by the behavior of priests or bishops, or people that have a certain idea of or a fear of God and rebel against that. Let's get rid of that God that makes me feel bad about myself and constricts my freedom. So you always have to wonder, well, what exactly is someone rejecting? Is it truly the Catholic Church? Is someone who attacks me on Twitter or in social media, that happens from time to time, is that person truly attacking me because I'm a priest? Or are they attacking what they project on me, their idea of what a priest is, based perhaps on experience that they've had? Who am I to judge that other person for the criticism? It's not I'm not saying that you have to accept all criticism and that you never have to defend yourself or block people. I do that from time to time when it gets too bad. But always remember there may be the pursuit of something good underneath this behavior. And so with this book, I'm thinking, well, what I think Philip Pullman tries to reject is the image of a God that is almost like a tyrannical God, like a God with not a capital G, but a God that is perhaps misunderstood. He is not a theologian. He has read some books. He wrote a book about Jesus, and in preparation for that, he also, among other books, he read the books by Emeritus Pope Benedict about Jesus. So he does do his research. And I can also – I found a very interesting interview with him about religion. And I'll include a link in the show notes. It's definitely worth your time, especially if you've already read his Dark Materials. And you see that he's actually still evolving in his perception of what the church teaches. And he describes at one point in his life when he was around in his 20s, he had a Gnostic phase where he tried to find the meaning of life and sense in knowledge, in understanding. And then – of course, Gnosticism is condemned by the church. And what I also didn't know is that he reveals that his grandfather was actually a cleric, I assume probably from the Anglican church. And so his grandfather used to read him a lot of Bible stories. And part of his fascination for telling stories and for mythology and for these bigger themes comes from his upbringing, his religious upbringing by his grandfather. Now, somehow I think that something in there may be something that he doesn't tell us. Perhaps there is a traumatic experience or I don't know, or just a misunderstanding, just a rejection of what he at one point in his life thinks that faith does to people. Perhaps he had people surrounding him. I don't know. And let's be honest, there is a lot wrong with the church. There has always been a lot wrong with the church. If you saw the behavior of some of the apostles, then that may have scandalized people in the time of Jesus. You know, what about that Judas? Who can believe in a Messiah who hires a guy like that? Just saying, this has always been part of the problems that people sometimes have in distinguishing between the ideal that God gives us and the fallibility of his ground personnel in a certain way. People may look at me as a priest and projecting all sorts of saintly things on me. Well, people that work with me on a daily basis know that I am definitely not the ideal priest or the textbook priest. I have my moments where I lose my patience, where I swear, where I'm like, I'm very limited. But I'm a priest and I'm also a human being. That's why in the Catholic Church we have the sacrament of confession. There's always this renewal that is possible. And thank God, literally, I have a mirror and I can look at myself in the mirror and tell myself I'm not there yet. I need God's forgiveness. I need his grace, his working in my soul to become a better person. Otherwise, I would perhaps be tempted to put myself above other people and thinking, well, I'm here. I'm a priest. I'm holy. I know how the world works. Instead, I think the gospel always challenges to be humble, not submissive. That if you would talk about humility with Philip Pullman, he would probably think you're talking about being submissive and being a slave and not being free and not being able to make your own choices in life. I would say humility is knowing where you stand in life, knowing that you need God to become a better person. and certainly also acknowledging that just like any other human being, you have your sins, you have your shortcomings, but there is always hope that with God's help, you can try again and become better, etc. I wish I could have a conversation like that with Philip Pullman. But I think that there's a – I'm very curious about the third book and where that book is going. And maybe one day I may have a conversation with this writer, because I'm still convinced that he's looking for something and he's not done looking. He's not done searching. And so who knows? Who knows what will happen in the future? That's what I wanted to share with you, my review, my initial impressions of the book, The Subtle Knife by Philip Pullman. Links to the article that I talked about in the show notes, and keep an eye on Amazon, Kindle's discount pages. Perhaps they will put it up on sale one of these months, and you'll be able to check it out for yourself. If you want to listen to more of my episodes, just go to tridio.com. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel. And if you like Star Wars and you like me talk about Star Wars, then consider subscribing to my new Star Wars show. It's called That Star Wars Priest, and it's available on tridio.com, but also in the iTunes store. And just put the feed in your podcatcher of choice. Thanks for joining me today, and I'll be back tomorrow. Take care, and God bless.